It's the Infinite Shores Podcast,
where we open up an infinite can of worms. I'm Luke.
And I'm Brandon. And this is a special edition of the podcast because we are breaking right in the middle of our series on fantasy literature to go into The Giver, which is kind of fantasy literature. It's kind of more post-apocalyptic science fiction. And it's kind of neither one because it's sort of its own thing. But we're going to talk about it.
Yep, this is early dystopian. We should mention the author here. It's Lois Lowry, and she's created a really nifty world. This is a world where there's no pain, and no one is ever hurt. We come into the world of the community, where everything is same. You're marked from birth for what you're going to do. At age 12, you're given your task, and everything and everyone is happy.
Now, the main character is a kid named Jonas, and we meet him right about the point where he's getting his task. And unlike all of his fellow students at his age who are going into various roles in the community, he's been given a very special privilege, a very special honor, and a very special task to be the new receiver, the one person in all of the community who remembers things, remembers emotions, remembers feelings, remembers color, and so on. And so he has to receive those things from an old man who's been the receiver for the longest time, who is called the Giver. And so that's kind of where the story starts. And throughout the course of it, Jonas learns what it means to be the receiver and how that's going to impact his life and the choices it forces him to make.
It's a fascinating novel because at the beginning, everything really does seem perfect, and it seems like the perfect world. It's not like Hunger Games where you know from the beginning this is a bad place. This looks good, and you don't even realize what's missing until Jonas starts discovering these things.
Yeah, you know, it looks good, but isn't there a sense, too? I mean, I got the sense reading it, and I just reread it over the last couple of days, so I'm kind of fresh off of it. But doesn't it really seem like, even though everything seems to work really well, there's this strange sense of everything's just a little off, you know? Like things just don't seem right somewhere. It all seems good, but almost too good.
Yeah, everything is very formal and very structured, which frankly just rubs me the wrong way. So maybe that's just it, is that I don't like that very formal, rigid. Every child celebrates their birthday on the same day, so no one's singled out, and it's always a big ceremony. School is very formal. One of the things that rubbed me the wrong way early on in the book, you find out that every family has a time for sharing feelings. And they all talk about what they felt on that day, and there's you're not allowed to hide anything. There's no privacy. And that just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, the fact that you're really not allowed to opt out of sharing. And it strikes you as they sit there and they talk and they're trying to come up with the right word for their emotion. And yet you get this sense that the way they're conveying that emotion really is not it's not reflective of how they're actually feeling or appropriate for the situation, which kind of gets us into the theme. Do you want to talk, Luke, a little bit about what do you see as the main theme of this story?
A large part of this story talks about how if you cut out the bad things, you end up also cutting out all the good things. You need to recognize who you are. You can't cover it up. And the second you start covering it up, you lose so much. I want to be careful here because it's not like it's talking about let your sinful nature run wild. That's not the theme. But recognizing that there are these dark moments of depression and despair and pain. And if you take that away, you lose the ability to really have joy and happiness and even love.
You need to be able to feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I can go with that.
And, you know, as you were saying, you lose so much when you don't know how to feel. And then in order to eliminate feeling, they really, as a society, had to eliminate a lot of things. They had to eliminate the ability to see differences in people because those differences would make people feel things about each other. And they have to For instance, there's the pill that they have to take after they start to feel their stirrings around the time that they turn 12, and all to eliminate feelings that might cause them to act rashly or to think about a certain person, you know, in a special way. And so, they eliminate feelings, but they lose so many blessings in life because of it.
Yeah, one of those things, and you started talking about it there, they talk about how everyone has a sameness. And it's very interesting how they cover that up, because everyone has a very particular task. A doctor is not a nurturer, is not a teacher, is not a government worker, and they recognize that, but yet everyone is also the same, and you're not allowed to stand out. They don't really celebrate those differences that people have simply by nature. We're not created the same.
Okay, so when you think about that whole thing, of that whole concept of sameness, one of the things that kind of jumps out to me is, you know, the word equality, which is never used in the book. Mm-hmm. I don't think the word equality ever came out in the text at all. And yet that's in some ways, this society is kind of a one logical conclusion of, you know, hyper focus on equality taken, up a few notches, right? Mm-hmm. To the point of where we say, well, everybody's created so equal that we dare not imply that anybody has anything distinctive about them.
Yeah, they really stress this sameness idea that everyone has to be the same, and they really lose something. As Christians, we can recognize that we are all the same in some very important ways. All have sinned and fall short the glory of God and are justified freely by God's grace. And that's awesome. But God also creates us differently. Paul talks in 1 Corinthians how a hand isn't a foot, isn't an eye. And every part is important, but we have different roles. And we can glory in that. My gifts. I don't have the gift to put together an awesome quilt. I don't have that gift. You don't want me to put... Don't put me in charge of that. And I recognize that that's different. Someone else has that talent, and that is an awesome talent. But I don't have that. We're not the same. We're different.
You know, I wonder sometimes if just the fact that we as a culture are so focused on equality that we're losing that sense of the importance of being different. You know what I mean? That, well, for instance, you see that in the way that our society handles the roles of men and women. Clearly, God had the intent that men and women would play different roles in society, in the family, in the church, and so on. And he wired us very specially so that we could play out those different roles. But now our society has turned around and said, no. We don't like this idea of differences. We don't like this idea of being different from one another. We'd prefer it if we were all just the same. So we're just going to pretend that we're all just the same, and we're going to try to say that we're all just the same. And we say you can't point to the differences, or you'll be in trouble. And the funny thing is, of course, that the more people kind of emphasize that, the more they keep running up against the brick wall of God's created order.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, in the society, they had pills to take care of that. I pray that we don't come to that in reality, but yeah, that's how they dealt with it in The Giver.
Right.
And we saw that you mentioned earlier, I think we talked about the emotions and the flattening of the emotions, and something really deadly happening there that you mentioned a favorite scene as Jonas asked his parents a very important question.
Oh yeah, well, there's this part where Jonas has just discovered the meaning of the word love, which is a word that has almost lost all meaning in their society. And he asks his parents, "Do you love me?" And their reaction, it's almost this kind of anti-climax moment, because suddenly they laugh and they say, "Oh, that's not a very precise word, Jonas. You could have asked a lot of different things. Do we value you? Do we take pride in you? Do we enjoy your company?" And so suddenly the word love is kind of just brushed off. But that makes it all the more powerful as you realize, whoa, like these people have no concept of love. Love means nothing to them. There's no emotion attached to it. And that's kind of a scary thing. And I as I think I said to you earlier, Luke, if you think about that a little bit, How close are we to that when we throw around the word love so flippantly? You know, I love cheeseburgers. I love, comic books. I love my wife.
Let's not get personal.
And, right, I know. I love my wife and I love Jesus, you know. But we use the same word, but we mean a lot of different things.
And when I look at the people that are around me, I don't know if we have the same depth when it comes to that word. Even when we mean it as strong as we do, we have this almost movie-type quality of, I want to be with you forever. I think of not a science fiction movie, but Dirty Dancing, where they've known each other, a week maybe? And Baby says to Johnny, I don't want to ever lose this feeling. And yeah, that's really intense. But it's not the depth of what love really is, that selfless giving.
Yeah, this is something that I try to teach teenagers as I talk with them about this issue in my ministry is it's so tempting to use the word love when you feel this intense emotion with somebody. And yet, how quickly people who, you know, teenagers get into a relationship and say, I love you to the other person, and 3 months later, 6 months later, they're broken up, and you say, well, was it really worth using that word? And so instead, I try to teach them, you know, to be cautious about using the word love and cautious about handing that out. And instead, to really embrace the concept of what true love is really an action, or it's something that you do. Not something you just feel.
Absolutely, and that was certainly lacking in the community, that they had this concept of valuing people, and I think that that's certainly a good word to use. I value you, but it's, as you noted, there's something lacking when there isn't that love, and because of that love, they were missing some very important things. You mentioned that love is an action. They did not express that love very well when it came to children or the elderly. So some spoilers here from the book. They talk about release. When the elderly reach a certain age, they're released, and what everyone is told is that they are sent out and released from the community to go elsewhere. And if there are too many babies born in a particular year, the extra babies are simply sent elsewhere. And we find out in a very horrifying scene that what actually happens is they're given an injection and they die. They're killed.
Yeah, it is a very horrifying scene when you come upon it and you realize what's actually happening. And, you know, maybe by that point you've started to guess that something isn't right about all of this. But it's interesting, as you pointed out, they use the word released. And I think at one point Jonas, even in his kind of in his own head, understands the distinction between being lost, which he talks about a situation where a boy falls into a river and is lost, and then he talks about that being different from being released. But he doesn't understand what those things are until he sees a video of a child being released, being killed, and then he cries out in horror, and it's devastating to him emotionally. Because for the first time, he really understands what's going on in his society.
But if you're lacking love, what else would you have? You simply look for the usefulness of people. And too many babies, that's not useful. Too many elderly, that's not useful. And so it links together rather well to show what happens when you don't have that love.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, as we look at our own society, I think we can kind of see us going down a similar road where, you know, they sort of dehumanized the process by calling it release instead of killing, or release instead of euthanizing even. They basically take away all, any intensity of the concept, and they really change the meaning and the way people think about it. And I think we do the same thing. I think we're doing that in our society when we talk about terminating a pregnancy rather than using the word abortion. When we talk about, giving somebody a peaceful end of life. In fact, I've even heard the phrase release from pain used as a euphemism for euthanizing somebody. It's become politically correct to do those things. But once again, we're changing the meaning of the words so that we can kind of avoid the intensity of the emotion associated with them.
And we do that as a culture. We like making things prettier than they are, trying to take away that hard edge, as you noted. And it's something that's very dangerous. We need to look at things and say, this is what they are. See the ugliness of the situation so that you can really say, yeah, this is wrong. This isn't just an opinion. This is wrong.
Well, and I think, you know, the fact that we tend to do that as a culture really just betrays the fact that we have a conscience, because deep down we're afraid to call it what it is. If we do, we have to face what we're really doing. And so we call it something else so we can sterilize it and so that we can avoid having to face that. But that's not good for us spiritually, and we know that. The thing to do with sin is not to just brush it away or to cover it up, but to confront it head on and to take it to the cross. And at the cross we find forgiveness for our sin, and we find the true meaning of what love is, as you were talking about the true meaning of love. And at that point, we can then turn around and say, okay, this is how I'm going to live a life that honors what Jesus did there on that cross.
You know, you just made me think of something there, that we try to sterilize the cross so often as a society and say, well, Christianity is about being nice, Christianity is about this. And, well, if you try to turn away from the pain of the cross, you can't have the joy of heaven.
Yeah, absolutely.
The depth of love there, and the exact opposite of the community and the giver.
When we see ourselves rightly from God's perspective, in a lot of ways, life is kind of messy. It's not all perfect, like that, like the society they tried to put together in the giver. Life is messy. We mess it up, and we have messiness, and our emotions make it messy a lot of times because we tend to react emotionally. But the fact is that that messiness drives us back to the cross, and it
Absolutely.
Drives us back to seeing the need for Jesus and to hanging on to him. And so would we ever want to lose the depth of our feelings if it meant that we would lose our need for the cross? No, absolutely not.
I think that's an awesome place that it's been summed up now. Just to be clear, for those who have not read the book, Lois Lowry is not pro killing and so on. In the book, it is very clear that this is a horrifying thing, and Jonas and the giver do what they can to change things. We usually recommend a book at this point, and we're just recommending, if you haven't read it, go read The Giver. It's a nice short book, very clear,
yeah.
Very direct.
It'll take you about 2 hours to read.
Yeah.
Pretty not very long, but yeah, I guess if you take your time, maybe 4 hours. Good book. We have a little bit of an announcement about the way we're going to be doing things with our Infinite Shores blogs and podcasts. Luke, do you want to explain it?
Sure. We've started talking and noticing that a number of other websites will actually do podcasts of their blog entries. And so going forward, Brandon and I will be doing our blog posts as we have been, but we will also record ourselves reading that. So if you prefer listening, you'll have that option from now on.
I think that'll be pretty cool. Or maybe
Well,
not.
I hope so. We'll find out.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you for joining us for this special edition of the Infinite Shores podcast, and we'll catch you next time.